You're listening to Ultimate Despair Reprise. Hope you're pre-bared.
Hello and welcome everybody to Ultimate Despair Reprise, a Danganronpa recap podcast going through the entire series, one murder at a time. I am your ultimate host, Kyrie.
I am the ultimate didn't study for the test, Jackie.
I am the ultimate prepared podcaster, Jennifer.
Oh.
Don't you fucking throw shade at me.
I'm the ultimate whatever the fuck. I don't even know anymore.
We're
the ultimate disasters. All
yeah.
Right? Listen. We're all kind of disasters. We all just completed Daily Life Chapter 2 of Danganronpa 1, Trigger Happy Havoc, and
some just more than others.
Some, yes. Some.
Everybody's taking digs on me because I just did it. Like right now,
quite literally,
but
3 minutes ago.
But the past 3 weeks have been a fucking roller coaster for me.
So this chapter opens up, and I kind of adore this. It's just this very somber music. You open up it starts with you going into the bathroom, and Makoto being like, "Oh, huh," like just kind of realizing that right, a murder happened here. Right, because it's like the events of, you know, Sayaka's murder and Leon being executed and Junko getting fucking impaled. That shit happened yesterday, and it's all fresh, you know.
Yeah, I think it was really cool how he, or not really cool, but I think it was very evocative how during that sequence, like he's shocked. And he's kind of still a little bit disgusted. He's still a little bit disgusted with the fact, especially that, like, you know, that all this happened here and that, like, the room is clean. You know, that there is the only evidence that Sayaka was even at this room, in this room, and at this school and was killed, you know, is his memory of her.
Yeah. Hey, I wonder if I took a screen. He says something like kind of at the beginning. I have a screenshot here. It's like it's almost like there was nothing. There was never anything there to begin with. So it's a very somber way to start this off.
They're pretty good at establishing that. Yeah, someone ended up dying, and it's an interesting path of okay, we have to. Even though we're not necessarily getting over what happened, we have to move on and hopefully bring an end to this one way or another.
Yeah, it definitely in terms of moving on, though, like it's one of those things where they try to get back into the routine where that morning Makoto shows up for the morning meal, right? And Ishimaru, fucking subtle as a brick, like Makoto's being very honest. And he's like, oh man, I, you know, he's still having trouble processing things. And Ishimaru just goes, I imagine it'd be pretty hard to sleep with a rotting corpse in your bathroom. Which, Ishimaru.
Yeah, that's a little, I think that kind of highlights how young the characters are, though. They're still at the age where they don't have that immediate response to, like, respond to things with tactfully, you know? Like these are high school kids, not like grown ass adults. And I feel like, you know, if this was a work like that took place, say Hope's Peak College, you know, there would be more likely, you know, that they'd be like treating it with a kid's glove and that they'd be treading carefully. But, like, no, like, Taka just fucking yeets it, like, oh, yeah, you know, you slept with the corpse in your bathroom, huh? Like...
I mean, I think that kind of Devil May Care attitude is sort of being cultivated by Monokuma.
I don't think it's necessarily Devil May Care. I think he just doesn't think twice about it. Like, I think he just more of, like, I think it's not, like, he just doesn't have to tact. Like, it's just tactless. Like, he didn't really think about it. And it's not, like, it's not an act of callousness, but it's just...
Yeah, it's one of those things where the situation is definitely playing up people's proclivities for being a little bit, as you mentioned, callous. But, yeah, some of these people are just kind of terrible people sometimes.
I think also, like... Monokuma kind of wants you to sort of regard the killings as less real than they are, because if you don't really understand the weight of it, then you're more likely to go kill someone.
Yeah, absolutely. Of course, he is still acting like a school headmaster and. Fucking, I think it's, like, after the chapter, like, title card. You know, everybody's called into the gym and he does, like, some fucking morning calisthenics or whatever the fuck in the gym to that song that they play in Japan on the radio where everybody does those stretches.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And, of course, Ishimaru is the only one who's, like, taking it seriously. It's a very Ishimaru focused chapter, I noticed. Or maybe that was just kind of me, because, we'll get into it later, but I kind of spent my daily life section with him.
Yeah, they spent a lot more time getting into his stances, his moral stances, and how they can both go in favor of or against someone like Mondo.
I spent my daily life segment hanging out with Chihiro, and you can tell about how well that went for me.
Yeah,
fun stuff.
I also hung out with Chihiro, like, the whole chapter.
Hey, Chihiro Squad.
Chihiro Squad.
Yeah, I really liked the dialogue that you get with her, like, the conversations that you have with her where, like, she kind of comes out of her shell are really good. I really like those. It kind of just makes it worse that this all ends the way it does.
Let's get into it. What were some of the standout moments about Chihiro's social link for the two of you? Because I had already completed her social link, but I like that was in my previous playthrough. What stood out to y'all? She likes feety pajamas. We know this.
So I had of the gifts I could give her, I didn't really have anything that she, like, loved, but I had a lot of feety pajamas, so I ended up eating, like, feety pajamas and video games at her the entire time.
You gave her...
Which made the greatest mental image of just, like... Also, here's the thing, her generic bark is, oh, I've never gotten something like this before, when she receives something. So, like, I handed her a pair of feety pajamas, and then literally, like, 6 hours later gave her another pair of feety pajamas. And she was just absolutely ecstatic. She went bonkers and fucking yonkers for him.
Well, maybe it's like no one's ever given her two pairs of feety pajamas. It's always been sets of one.
This is the second pair of dinosaur pajamas you've given me today. Thank you, Makoto.
It's a really cute image.
At first, I thought your like weird obsession about just putting the fucking smackdown on birds was kind of off-putting. But now I can kind of see... I can kind of appreciate it. I really do appreciate the dinosaur pajamas, Makoto. Do you think before
all this happened, she had several pairs of feety pajamas?
I feel like before the Hope Peak incident, she exclusively wore like Kigurumi feety pajamas, and then like she ended up like she goes into Hope's Peak. Wearing, like, her actual uniform, because it's like, okay, I can't just wear feety pajamas all the time. Like, that's really kind of immature.
I can't just wear this these dinosaur pajamas
I have to look. Yeah, I can't wear dinosaur pajamas for the rest of my life. I have to look good for my first day of class. And she ends up in there, and the whole Hope's Peak thing happens. And her first thought upon waking up is, "Oh fuck me! I should have worn the Feedy pajamas."
Jed, what are your thoughts on Feedy pajamas while we're on this very important subject?
They seem really comfortable, and
they are.
Yeah.
Well,
to our coffee so we can get our feet, so we can each get a pair of Feedy pajamas.
My thoughts on it are: pack twice as many Feedy pajamas as you think you might need.
What if we could get Danganronpa podcast themed Feedy pajamas, and we all wear them to recording sessions?
Oh, what if we all? What if we? Okay, what if for MAGFest 2020, when we put on this panel or whatever the fuck, you hear to hear first, folks. We're just gonna wear Feedy pajamas.
Yeah, we're all gonna be wearing Feedy pajamas. The panel's literally just gonna be, you're not allowed in if you're not wearing Feedy pajamas. So like, we see a motherfucker dressed normally, and we all jump him right outside of the, right outside the doors. They're like, oh hey, a Danganronpa panel, cool, I'll step in, and we immediately take a bat to their shins.
So, what kind of stuff did you talk about with Chihiro?
Well, Feedy pajamas mostly. but yeah, like Chihiro's thing is pretty cool. Like she's the ultimate programmer, and she's making, you know, she's like, oh yeah, I edited the, how'd you first get into programming? Oh yeah, well I, you know, got this, you know, I wasn't athletic, so I didn't play with outside with the other kids, so I just kind of stuck inside and programmed. And I ended up making essentially Super Google. And then I made an AI. You know, as one does.
As one does. It's like, oh yeah, I made an AI that passed the Turing test with flying colors.
Also,
yeah, she's normal.
Also, isn't there something in here about how, like, the first thing that she programmed was like some kind of database lookup search thing?
Yeah, that used voices, that used voice recognition.
That sounds incredibly complicated for a first project.
Oh yeah.
Well, like I'm not the world's greatest programmer, but that sounds...
But she's the ultimate programmer. She's the Coco
now,
Kisei.
I am the world's greatest programmer, and I also have huge meat. And yeah, it is very difficult. Which I know firsthand because I am the world's greatest programmer.
Absolutely.
And also my meat is huge.
Great. Yeah, it's like her social link is... great, and it's Chihiro's just a great character. We all love her.
Yeah, Chihiro's a good time.
Yeah. Jen, who did you hang out with during your daily life segment?
It was a mix of Chihiro and Mondo. So aside from the other stuff we've talked about with Chihiro, Mondo was talking about how he needed to get me on a bike as soon as we were out here. There was something slightly almost sort of romantic about it in a way, just being very attached to bikes and be like, oh yeah, I need to bring you into my whole lifestyle. It'd be great. And at some point during that exchange, I forget why, but he gets all flustered, mutters something about killing me, and wanders off. And
like a sort of I'll kill you later. I've never done a social link, so
yeah.
Yeah.
Makoto mentioned something about him looking flustered and how that was almost cute in a way, so.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, there is, like, something disarming about, like, big tough guy character getting all blushy and weird. But yeah. Any other points about, like, Mondo? What gifts did you give him?
I gave him whatever looked like the toughest thing. I think I gave him something resembling a skull. I have my issues with Mondo already. I was just kind of curious to see where this went. So I gave him whatever looked like the toughest thing in my inventory at the time and just moved on.
You gave him the Dan Aykroyd skull vodka.
I think so, yeah, actually.
I definitely liked Mondo a lot more in this one. It's just that you know, like knowing how this goes makes it so much worse because it.
Like, yeah, we won't mention it, but we've been kind of beating around the bush, but like, I don't know, I might cut this part out, but we all kind of know where this chapter goes, and it's not super great.
Yeah, I found myself, like, I found parts of it being very much trying to get me sympathetic to Mondo, and I really liked the bit where he and Taco were in the, like, sauna, and how that was, like, them being dumb and, like, you know, trying to outdo each other and prideful, and then they kind of, like, become friends. That I kind of liked, and then that's immediately soured by knowing what happens next.
Yeah. So, speaking of Ishimaru, though, I hung out with Ishimaru during the social life segment because of how y'all how all y'all talked about him in the last episode. I was like, you know what, maybe I was a little too harsh on Ishimaru. I wanted to see what his fucking deal is. And he has, honestly, one of the funniest social links, like, in this game. First, the secret to success was to give him a bunch of Kamen Rider scarves. He really dug that. Turns out he's a big Kamen Rider fan. That's hard. The eyebrows probably give that away. But anyway, like, the first part of his link is, you know, Makoto's like, hey, man, what do you do for fun, like, outside of, like, school? And he's like, oh, I just study constantly. Like, I just study, so I can be better. And then, Makoto's like, oh, do you have any friends? And this just kind of, like, shocks Makoto, like Ishimaru to his fucking core. And it's like, wait a minute. I didn't have friends because I was studying the whole time?
Aww.
And he's just kind of losing his mind. And it's just sort of Makoto going, no, dog, it's okay. You just need to have, like, some hobbies. And he goes, fine, I'm going to study my hardest to learn hobbies. And it's like, okay, Ishimaru, whatever. That being said,
he's a good boy.
Yeah, he's a good boy. Valedictorian for life. What was it? Although the very first time I talked to him, sauna opened up on the first floor, and one of the things Ishimaru said was, when you see someone naked, you can tell at a glance whether they're trustworthy or not. Alright, when the body is naked, so is the soul, so get the stripping down, which, hey, Ishimaru, listen, I like you, buddy, I like you, but let's buy me dinner first, you know what I mean? The second part of the social link is Ishimaru really likes your fashionable hoodie and wants to confiscate it from you and wear it himself.
There you go. Well, here's the thing, though. Like, if he does that, he takes over the main character slot.
Are you saying he's been jockeying to be the main character the whole time?
I'm going to say, here's my pitch.
Uh-huh.
Whoever holds the hoodie holds the main character slot.
That's true for one game.
Yeah. for one game. They decided this was untenable for the second and third game.
Wait. Koma Yeda kind of has a hoodie. Does that mean he's, like,
we'll talk
half
about
a protagonist?
Talk about Koma Yeda. We'll talk about Koma Yeda
Here's
later.
The thing. All you need to be a protagonist is huge meat and a hoodie.
In this franchise, it's an ahoge, but sure.
Like, how much of a protagonist does that make him? Like he sort of has an ahoge. In some portrayals, it looks like he has, like, a very solid, like, fin lifting out the back of his head, and that and that kind of looks like an ahoge, and it's fully connected with the rest of his hair.
Well, that's not to depict him as particularly foolish or silly, so much as it is to depict him as extremely aerodynamic.
Yeah.
That's not happening.
Yeah, Shark by Ada. Watch out for Shark by Ada.
Listen, he's not particularly relevant to the plot, but he moves very, very quickly.
Okay, I just burst. Oh man, I just clipped all my levels that I've been trying to maintain. So
good work, Kiri.
Yeah, and then so after the thing with Jacket, you do learn that Ishimaru kind of has a bit of a hang-up over the word genius, because he thinks, you know, people being called geniuses are really just kind of coasting through life, and you find out that his grandfather was a former prime minister of Japan and was considered a genius, but after being embroiled in a, you know, scandal, it kind of brought, you know, the name, the Ishimaru name, like, down, and he basically says his life goal is to, like, prove that average people can be exceptional, which is, like,
I kind of like that, yeah.
Yeah, I like it a lot. It's like, there's something to it where he is basically saying, like, my grandfather kind of coasted, you know, off of his general intelligence and stuff like that. You know, he says things like, it's not geniuses that change the world, it's ordinary people who make every effort they can. This is, unfortunately, though, we do find out that his true goal is to create a meritocracy, which, whoops.
I don't know, there's nothing wrong with a true meritocracy, provided that there's also, like, you know, actual maintenance for the people who aren't able to perform. But
hey,
it's kind of a loaded term. Kind of a loaded term. Doesn't really work.
Yeah. We'll definitely have to get it. We'll have to start a new separate podcast.
We're gonna start a new separate podcast where I just yell at y'all about politics for like fucking
great.
3 hours.
Yeah, and I yell at y'all about map games.
Great. Jackie,
and as in her fucking map
games. Jackie gets a copy of the Communist Manifesto, and
I just beat y'all over the head.
And I force everyone at gunpoint to play Kaiserreich.
Great.
It's gonna be great.
I force myself at gunpoint to not.
But yeah,
you can't stop me. You can't stop me. I don't value.
I'm going to make you understand these arcade memes.
Okay.
Bold of you to assume I can ever understand anything.
So I assume that I can make this segue into something. So yeah, that was kind of like Ishimaru's like whole thing. It was like he kind of grew with me as a character in a way. Like I started to understand kind of his deal a little bit more.
I actually really like his. I don't know if I mentioned I really like his design, but I've been thinking about his design a lot more as while I've been playing, and it really does like sell him as an extremely uptight and high strung individual.
Yeah, he has the extreme Ryu eyebrows that
crest
above like his
hairline. I kind of really like his friendship with Mondo. Because they are both very much like that at very different angles. Like, Mondo is in a biker gang, and he's very high-strung about that. And he's very high-strung about, you know, they're both kind of very up there with, like, masculinity and authority. And,
But yeah, in, like, different
This boils angles. Down to me just saying Mondo is a top, and Taka is his bottom.
But is he a power bottom?
Absolutely not. He's the most powerless bottom.
Speaking of Taka being powerlessly top bot, so the sauna. So
it's okay. Take your time.
Do we talk about the sauna scene? Because the sauna scene is honestly one of the funniest fucking things in this entire game.
Yeah.
Jed, introduce us to the fucking sauna scene.
So Makoto's making a stop by the cafeteria, I believe, as things are about to lock up. And
He's like in a late night snack because he's like hungry.
Yeah, and he runs into Ishimaru and Mondo, getting into a really ridiculous argument over who's better. Essentially, like Ishimaru's scolding Mondo for being a rebel who doesn't play by the rules, and Mondo's like, "You're a suck up, and I hate you." So.
You're a loose cannon, Mondo.
they get very competitive against each other. They kind of ramp up and escalate to the point where they're like about to come to blows, and then they come to this idea: oh, hey, we're gonna go into the sauna and have a test of endurance.
Yeah,
yeah. And Makoto, we want you over there so you can judge and make sure no foul play happens. You tell us who won. You tell us who's the most badass here.
And Makoto waits for hours outside that door, very explicitly, until after like bedtime, and then
after basically like after an hour, he's like, okay, you know what? I'll leave you two to it. I'm really not involved in this process.
And then Mondo and Taka fuck.
Yeah, hey, quick sidebar. Have you ever been in, like, a sauna? Like
actually? Yes, I personally have, yeah. Once, but...
I've been in saunas a couple of times. Jen, and has ever been in a sauna?
Nope.
Nah.
Really?
Well, let me put it to you this way. A sauna, typically the temperature is kept at 100 degrees Celsius. Like, quite literally, the temperature going on in there is boiling. Like, the idea is that, like, your sweat evaporates and it cools you down a little bit, but that shit is very, very hot. And we forgot to mention that Mondo fucking goes in there wearing his giant dumb trench coat and
his stupid open Gakuran, and it's just fucking just is like, Taka takes his clothes off, which is reasonable, which you're supposed to do in a sauna. Mondo just fucking yeets up in there and
puts a towel on his pompadour.
Yeah. I was about to say, I feel like we were kind of beating around the bush getting to the fact that Mondo puts a towel on his hair.
I mean, granted, if you had Mondo's hair, can you tell me with complete honesty that you would not put a towel on it? I'd put a towel on, like, I'd put a fucking towel on that shit when I go to the pool.
You wear it. It's just very
I'd
funny.
I'd have fucking two towels. I'd have one for my pompadour and one for my dick.
It's just very...
What a fashion statement.
Yeah. So it's just...
You have one on your hair and one on your erect penis.
Yeah, Mondo should be fucking...
That's how it's done.
Mondo should be fucking dead, by the way. With the amount of heat that's being generated in that sauna with his clothes.
I mean, they stayed in there overnight. They should both be fucking dead.
But instead...
You shouldn't be in a sauna for more than, like...
You shouldn't be in there for longer than, like, 30, 40 minutes.
Yeah, like, you shouldn't be in there for... I think an hour is about the hard limit that they give you. Like, hey, don't do this. That's dangerous.
I think at most saunas, you get, like, there's, like, usually, like, a little timer, like, outside, or a sand dial. Not sand dial. Fuck. Hourglass. That's what it is. An hourglass, usually.
Yeah, you know, there's a sundial out front.
And a sand dial for when you need to call up some fucking sand.
Yeah, hey, give that sand a call. Hey, hello, is this sand?
Yes.
Wait.
Well, there'd be no response because of it.
I was just gonna go, but yeah, when by the time Makoto wakes up and goes to the cafeteria again, everyone is freaked out because Mondo and Ishimaru are acting like best bros and everyone else kind of hates it.
Yeah,
yeah, they're homies.
Yeah, Mondo gets a fucking voice bark that is He mostly calls people like Teme and Bastard and shit like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, Kyodai. Call Taka Kyodai? Yeah, Kyodai, brother.
Yeah, yeah.
That's some fucking good shit. Yeah, like, I actually really like that. That's very cute.
I've been kind of having the awful thought that if this game were localized today, I feel like the phrase brosexual would come up.
Oh my god. Fucking as you're correct.
Here's the thing. I feel like,
bromosexual.
I feel like the phrase brosexual, like, it would be like, he'd be like, we're this is just a bromance. We're hobrosexuals. We're bromosexuals. Or some shit. And then, like, people would be very, very mad at like, the localization company. Be like, hey, change it back to Kyodai.
That being said, Jed, you might be able to help me out with this one. I think at one point, like, one of the artists or writers, like, basically confirmed that, like, in an alternate timeline, like, Mondo and Kiyotaka would actually be like lovers or something.
I don't remember seeing that, but I'd believe it.
Yeah, they're a very
they make a good couple. Again.
Yeah, they're very popular. Like in the fandom, they're a pretty popular pairing. Another interesting thing kind of happens in the cafeteria. See, like this chapter is weird because it's I actually quite like it because it's a series of bizarre vignettes, I think, of these characters being just weirdos. Like, so Celeste, they're like waiting for something. And it's like, oh, I'm so parched. I need some tea. She asks Ifumi, it's like, oh, Ifumi, can you make me some milk tea? And Ifumi is like reticent about it. He says, oh, all right, I'll make you some tea,
she's
Celeste.
Like, listen up, you fucking worm.
Well, not quite.
You goddamn animal. If you do not make me tea, I will slit your throat and I will drink your fuck. I will slake my fucking thirst with your blood. You goddamn swine. Bring me what I asked for.
He then gets it.
He then gets it. Oh, he doesn't actually. He gets the wrong thing. She asks for milk tea. You know what? He gets it. He gets her tea with milk. No, milk tea is a decoction.
Tea with milk. Tea with milk. That's just
tea
like
with milk is shit.
You fool! He fooled me. You fool! You imbecile!
You fool bastard!
Yeah.
You goddamn Neanderthal. I will end you where you stand.
Jed, you
were saying. I was going to say, and then you get a delightful new sprite of Celeste, where she's pointing her clawed finger like she's almost flipping you off, and looks like she's just about ready to kill you.
that's like fucking best sprite in the game. 10 out of fucking 10.
God, it's so good, because
top two sprites in Danganronpa, Chihiro smiling, the fucking Celeste ready to murk a guy.
It's the two genders, really.
There are many valid genders, and that's two of them.
And either being about to be murdered by Celeste or Chihiro being a smiling angel. Definitely. Yeah. Those two.
We're a gun.
Yep. So, God, there's just so many, like, bizarre and funny things that happen. One thing I realized that we all have been kind of collectively not necessarily brought up is that every time you go to sleep in this game, you get Monokuma Theater. And Monokuma Theater is incredible. So, like, when you go to sleep, it's basically Monokuma is, like, sitting on a stage monologuing, and, like, some new stage element gets added every time there's a, like, thing. And it's just usually him telling, like, a really weird story. I kind of wanted to get your thoughts on Monokuma Theater, because I like Monokuma Theater quite a bit, because it does break up the tension a little bit. Like, because
I think the exact opposite. It adds to the tension.
Really?
Because I think part of why I think Monokuma is threatening is that he is chaotic evil in a very straightforward way. Like, he is here to fuck around and get some people killed. And he doesn't, like, he's just, everything happens on a whim. And so this story is like, these stories and shit that where he's, like, goofing around, like, he doesn't take this seriously. Anybody can die, and many people will die because they amuse him.
Yeah, and also these stories are often very cryptic as well. But it has been kind of interesting. Jen, I don't know if you've felt the same way. It's been very interesting to see the Monokuma theaters, knowing where the story is, like, kind of going and how they're actually hinting at certain things.
Yeah, that's not really present in the other games, but for this one, when he's not cracking long-winded jokes or having setups that have no punchline, he's saying something that has something to do with what they're about to talk about. And for this one, it's him mentioning that he saw a pretty woman in the mirror, and that's because he was in the bathroom.
Which, hey, daily affirmations, you know? Little things. Little things that kind of get you through the day. One thing that has happened during this chapter is that after a murder happens after the class trial, is a new level of the school opens up. And so we're on the second level of the school, and we had mentioned that the sauna and warehouse had been opened up, but the two big pieces of the puzzle that have been opened up in this chapter are the pool and the library. The pool is interesting because there's the two locker rooms, and sitting in front of the locker rooms is a big Gatling gun, which is their security, their defense mechanisms against people getting into the wrong locker room. To which Owie thinks, oh, that would hurt if you got hit by it.
So you know when you said when you said Monokuma is woke? Turns out he was a fucking Republican. Monokuma was Ted Cruz this whole goddamn time.
Yeah. Because he makes a big point about how each person's student ID is tied to their gender in some way, and if someone with the wrong student ID goes into the wrong bathroom, then they will get shot up. And yeah, that's some real bullshit if you think about it for even a minute.
Yeah, and Celeste correctly points out, it's like, wait a minute, couldn't you just lend the handbook to another person? Wouldn't that immediately circumvent the entire system?
And he goes, Monokuma, 10,000 IQ brain genius that he is like, oh, okay. You can't do that now. That's the rules.
Yeah, because he's like, oh shit, somebody thought of an ingenious way around my... Do you think he intentionally left that, like, security flaw there waiting for someone to point it out so that he could make the...
Actually, yeah. Yeah, I feel like that would be, like, Monokuma Fair is like, oh yeah, you know what? I will leave this gap in, and the second somebody points them out, I will take it away from them. Because that's, like, kind of ties into the idea of, like, hope and despair.
Yeah, in a way, that's, yeah.
He dangles the possibility of cheating the system in front of you, and then when you, like, point out that you can do it, that it's possible, you know, he reminds you that he's in earshot, that he is listening, and that he can change the rules at whim.
He says,
your big meat cannot help you.
Yep. And all he cares about is protecting the holy image of the school itself. Hence why he doesn't give a shit about students spending the night with each other in different rooms.
Well, I mean, also, if he did that, that would kind of compromise the murderability of things.
Yeah, it kind of would, wouldn't it?
A little.
A little bit. I think the biggest thing in this chapter is definitely going through the library, which, which we get some more, like, really fun bits where Hifumi and Toko are kind of, like, sniping at each other for the shit that they write. Because Hifumi goes to the library and is like, where's all the comic books? Where's all the young adult novels?
Where's all the hentai?
Where's the hentai?
I thought this was a library. Where is my hentai?
I'm being censored right now. I want my hentai.
I'm going right to Monokuma.
I'm gonna call the cops!
And asking him to put some hentai in here.
Hello, police? There's no hentai in this school.
They don't find any hentai, but they do find a very interesting letter in the middle of the room. Where we learn to get... We finally get our first piece of, like... I wouldn't say lore, but, like, the first bits of, like, kind of what's going on, like, with the world. Do you remember what the letter said, y'all?
Yeah, I remember it because I basically just finished the chapter. But
tell us about the letter.
The letter is, it describes that the school has shut down and plans on reopening, but it shut down because of a horrible event that had occurred. The event is not explained, nothing's really gone into it, it's kept very vague, but, you know, the conclusion drawn is like, well, that's why there's nobody else here, and that's why there is, that's why there's nobody else here, and that's why the...
Metal bars are on all the windows and
stuff. I don't think it explains that, but I think it explains the, how the murderer was able to set up. Or not the murderer, the mastermind was able to set things up, and it opens up the venue for, like, well, if we find out what this event was, we could find out the motive of the mastermind and then figure a few things out about the history of the school and where we are and maybe how we can get out.
Exactly. And Kirigiri points out that, like, there's been like a significant amount of dust gathering on the letter, and it's like the letter had to have been sitting there for a year. But like the problem with that is for the students, they've only been in the school for a couple of days. Don't know what's up. There was a line in there that kind of like stuck out to me, and I think I'm just gonna have to make a like I'm gonna put a pin in it.
I don't know exactly what part you're talking about, but there might be something there, but I agree we should probably get to that when we are talking about the other games.
So afterwards, you know, you read the letter, you find a shitty old laptop that could probably barely run Windows 98 or whatever. I think Makoto says something like he wants to check his email or something.
He wants to check the news and like see what's going on in the outside world, if I recall correctly. Which is, you know, that makes sense.
Yeah. Try to figure out what the fuck is up. But mostly this library kind of becomes the domain of Byakuya, who...
Yeah, Byakuya is a fucking jerk, by the way.
Byakuya, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, at one point Makoto like walks into the library to find Byakuya reading, and like Makoto says, of all the things I'd imagined, this most definitely wasn't one of them. And it's like, Makoto, did you not expect Byakuya to be literate?
Well, I certainly didn't. I've never met a particularly literate rich man. So.
Yeah, I just know that like Mikoto says, like, Byakuya, what are you doing? And Byakuya goes, I'm fishing. What does it look like I'm doing?
he's reading Toko's book about the horny fisherman.
But yeah. The horny fisherman turned into
speaking about the words horny and Toko in the same sentence, Toko has you barge into the library with her towards the end of the free time period, and you go in, and she and Byakuya tells her that she's stinky and that she needs to bathe, and she's like, he cares about me.
Basically all these collection of seats are a bunch of assholes just kind of being assholes to each other, and that just makes me like want to hang out with them more, because you have Celeste throwing tea on the wall, calling Hifumi like a dumb pig to make him like some milk tea. You have Mondo and Ishimaru sweating themselves to death in a big dumb like show manliness. You have Byakuya just trying to read his like novels or whatever and telling Toko is stinky and Toko fucking loving it. There's something very endearing to me, and I kind of want to just like, I like spending time around these like very highly like, I don't even know how to really describe it, but they're all completely ridiculous. And there's something really fun about that.
Yeah, all the characters are, they're petty and messy and, you know, they're playing off of each other. And that's compelling because, you know, it makes them feel like they are characters outside of the murder novel, outside of the murder mystery, you know? Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a key part to why it has such a big fan base. Like, you see so much fan art and fan fiction and just people talking about what they might be doing if they're not stuck in this game, because people get really attached to these characters, and for good reason.
It's a kind of a big fanfic, like, kind of trope, is to kind of see these characters interact in a environment that you said isn't the murder game. And it's
or at least doesn't feel like it.
Yeah. But unfortunately, we do have the murder game.
And Monokuma calls everybody to the gym.
I do like that they do another like rendition of that sweeping camera like through the gym. Like I really like that a lot. Of it's very much a Monokuma drawing attention to himself to shake your world up once again.
And the way he opts to shake everybody's world up is he announces that he has everybody's darkest, deepest secret in these, and he kind of flips out his hand. It's a bunch of dumb, a fucking handful of stupid ass envelopes. it looks so goofy and ridiculous, and he's like, oh, well, as an incentive to make y'all do some murders,
I have your deepest, darkest secrets, and I'll reveal them in 24 hours if y'all don't kill anybody.
Then he fucking YOLOs and throws all
the... And he just yeets the fucking envelopes out into the crowd. Makoto grabs his pretty much immediately, and it is, as you'd about expect, he peed the bed till fifth grade, which...
He's a pee-pee-poo-poo pants.
He's yeah, trying. I guess he is. I guess he could be that. I guess that those are words you can string together to form a sentence.
They are.
Yeah. The great part about this is, A, Monokuma thinks that he can convince Makoto to murder just by being like, oh, hey, this kid pees the bed. And B, Makoto thinks, oh, everyone's secrets must be on that same level. They must all be something embarrassing, like, oh, I have a silly laugh, or, oh, I got held back a grade or something.
Well, I mean, that's no...
Kagawa still watches Naruto. Actually, I can't say that Naruto is a fucking slap. She still watches Boku no Hero Academia.
She writes fanfic in her spare time.
She writes fanfiction where Naruto and Sasuke fuck.
wait, are you trying to tell me that Toku Fukawa is a Fujoshi, and that's some shocking thing that we just found out?
That would be tough.
Well, are you telling me that Makoto Naegi peeing the bed is a shocking thing that we can find, is a shocking thing, is more shocking than Toku Fukawa being a Fujoshi? Like, you look at Makoto Naegi and you're like, yep, this guy pees the bed. Like, he's really... a little piss boy.
Yeah.
A little bird wrestling piss boy.
Oh my god.
Which coincidentally is my new Twitter handle. I'm gonna change it right now.
Bird
wrestling piss boy.
Yeah, and you're right, Jed. It introduces an interesting dynamic where it's like, oh, it can't really be that bad, because it does introduce this other layer of, like, can they take Monokuma seriously, right? And Ishibaru actually makes it pretty reasonable. Like, he has the first reasonable idea he's had since, like, having, like, morning breakfast, like, every morning. He's like, hey, why don't we all just say our secrets? That way they can't, like, kind of like take the power away from them being secrets. But then everyone is just like, you know, no, I'd rather no one know this. Like Celeste, Toko, Chihiro, Mondo. And like, even Mondo is like, listen, bro, it's a good idea, but I can't talk about this. Right. And it introduces that doubt. The problem is, I don't think, this is definitely a problem with the length of Danganronpa 1, is that you don't even get enough time to let the potential of everybody's secrets, like, kind of marinate through the story. Because, like, immediately at, like, literally the next scene, I think, is discovering Chihiro's body.
Right? Yeah, yeah, like he go to bed, and then next morning,
Chihiro's dead.
It sucks, man.
So hey folks, it's me, Kyrie. Thank you for listening to episode 3 of Ultimate Despair Reprise. We really appreciate it. You know, this is a labor of love, and we can't do this without your support. So thank you to everybody who's been listening in, everybody who's been following on Twitter, you know, retweeting us. It's been really good. Before we get to the heavy stuff, time for me to do a few shout-outs. Big thank you to Scanline Media for hosting this podcast. We really couldn't do it without Six and Jen's hard work, and we really think you should give them your support. Scanline Media is host to a whole array of podcasts, videos, articles, and lots more. They got shows like Bottle Crow, The Garnet Wager, and their newest show, The Johto Quorum. Also, if you subscribe to Scanline on Patreon, you get access to the exclusive show Oops All Anime, where Jen, Six, and a slew of rotating guests come in and give you just the hottest of anime takes. They just did an episode with Too Mellow, and they got wet and wild with some Godzilla stuff. Definitely check them out. Go on patreon.com/scanlinemedia or Check them out at scanlightmedia.com. Give them a listen. Give them your money. Give them your support. Music has been provided to us by Vetrom. Go check them out on YouTube at youtube.com/VTMprojects and listen to their remixes. These remixes are straight up fire. Check them out, and huge thanks for letting us use their music for the show. Also, thanks to Danny from Twitter for providing us with some great, great Monokuma voice clips. Check her out on Twitter, at MellowFrost. That's a 3 for the E and a 0 for the second O. Really thankful for the clips and goofs. But so I wanted to cut in here in lieu of our usual mid-episode break. I guess it would be usual if I literally didn't introduce it to the last episode. So we had a lot of fun recording this episode, but what we are talking about kind of isn't fun. Listen, folks, it's no secret that Chihiro is trans at this point, right? And this show is run by 4 trans women. The simple fact is, we all know what kind of happens in the next part of this chapter, and it's been on our minds since we started this project, and how we handle it has been discussed amongst us multiple times. We've had this conversation very frequently, and we came to a consensus. The next time we drop an episode for Ultimate Despair Reprise, you will get 2 episodes simultaneously. There is an episode that will fit in line with our normal list, but it'll be an episode celebrating the Danganronpa fandom, specifically the queer Danganronpa fandom. In fact, if you go on our Twitter right now, there's a survey that should still be up by the time this episode goes up. They'll be collecting responses until our next recording. We want to hear from you. We want to hear from the queer Danganronpa fandom, the fan who has thoughts and feelings on this series. We're going to go through the responses. We'll read them out on air. You know, Jen and I will share stories. We'll talk about what the series has meant to us as queer individuals. The other episode will be much more serious and will not be required listening. If you're not here to hear about transphobia, violence, just us really tearing into how shitty this next chapter is, you're more than welcome to skip it and join us next week. I'll put a story recap at the start of episode 5. That will be the start of chapter 3, just in case you want to skip chapter 2, Deadly Life, entirely. So if, you know, the forewarnings and anything like that makes you not want to play chapter 2, that's fine. That is totally reasonable. We want you to give the rest of the game a shot. Obviously, this is why we're doing this project, but chapter 2 is not required reading. So, anyway, thank you for listening. I'm going to let you get back to the show. Sorry it took so long to get this episode out. Life's been a little wee bit hectic lately. Anyway, your homework for this week will be to draw a picture of Chihiro in Fidi pajamas, but the chapter is totally optional. Talk to you next episode. Later.
All I'm saying is if Ted Cruz was in that, and he was, because Ted Cruz is Monokuma, and Monokuma is Ted Cruz.
Hottest new fan theory.
He would definitely...
Eat shit, Matt Pat.
Eat shit, yeah, fuck you, Matt Pat, you dumb bitch. You bitch-ass motherfucker, I'm calling you out. Ted Cruz is Monokuma.
Yeah, anyway.
Get with the fucking times, coward.
So, yeah, and... Like I said, it's like you don't have any time to let the secrets, you know, marinate and sit with anybody. It's like,
yeah, like throughout the story, Monokuma feels like feels like he's been in a huge rush to make these kids kill each other, and also the game has kind of been in a huge rush to do that.
It has been, like, it definitely feels like the game is trying to get to what it thinks is the point, or the meaty stuff, which is the, you know, death and murder. That being said, you know, the other games do draw things out a lot better. But yeah, I had forgotten how sudden it is. And it's a suddenness that doesn't exactly work in its favor either.
I don't think it works at all. Like, it especially because it really feels like it kind of just comes out of nowhere. Like, it really feels like the kind of thing that was added, like, late in production or writing or something, because there's, like, one or two links to it placed in elsewhere, and then it's just like, oh, it's Deadly Lifetime.
Yeah, I have some theories about that, but it's like,
yeah, it's less than grief. It's less than graceful.
Yeah, like I think we'll kind of get into this like sort of next episode. It's like I have some stuff about the scripting, but we'll save that.
I feel like it can really be summed up in
4-5 words.
Yes, his smile and optimism. Gone.
Yeah, shit sucks, dog.
Yeah. So next time, so that's been the Daily Life, and we end up in the Deadly Life. God, I listen, we're all for keeping it light, but man, I really was upset when like I realized like Chihiro was going to be the victim of this chapter. When I first played this, like I had grown very attached to Chihiro.
My story, I kind of knew that she was going to beef it. And I knew that I was braced for this. But the game just kind of grabbed the fucking table and bashed me over the head with it, because I mentioned how I was doing Chihiro's social link prior for this chapter, because I knew I wasn't going to get another chance. And it left on off on the note of, oh, hey, next time we talk, you should tell me about what you do for fun, Makoto. And then, like, the next time Makoto sees her, like, Chihiro is a corpse. Yeah, and that, like, that emotion, like, here's the thing. I am not, like, I am very difficult to rattle, especially with, like, fiction. But again, that has me, like, that actually shook me a little bit. Like, that had me, like, really, like, uncomfortable, but not in the, but, like yeah, like, uncomfortable. Like,
it was uncomfortable, but, like, I feel like the Sayaka, like, Sayaka's death in the previous chapter was way more effective at that. Like, this just feels like sudden, you know, whereas Sayaka's, whereas, like, Sayaka's, go ahead.
Like with Chihiro, like you literally go to bed, you get up, and you go to the dining room, and it's like, oh, these people are missing. We gotta go look for them, and
I thought that was very clumsy. I thought that the actual presentation, I feel like it forces you, I feel like it forces you to it, but the presentation of the body was, like, actually legitimately shocking.
Yeah, the scene, like, is shocking, and it's like in a vacuum I think it works, but
part of it lands, but the vast majority of it doesn't.
Also like I also knew going in that this is what happens, and honestly, like, seeing it happen kind of just made me, like, really angry and frustrated with the game. Like, not really frustrated with the characters, just that, oh, this is what the game has decided to do.
Yeah.
Like you go in and the death CG is, like, she's like tied to two like poles or whatever the fuck, spread eagle, and it's like, really? That's
yeah. She's in this, like a this, kind this, of crucified this looks pose.
Like, this looks like some fucking shit from Twin Peaks or Deadly Premonition. Like,
and not in
this
a,
is
like,
just ridiculous.
Yeah.
I thought I didn't think that it was. I thought that it wasn't. It wasn't as bad as I was expecting. It was a little bit more deft, but I was expecting really bad. And I don't. I mean, again, it wasn't as effective. It wasn't effectively emotionally. It was certainly very shocking, and it felt bad that, you know, of course it felt really, really bad knowing that, you know, Chihiro's fucking dead and that this work is about to dehumanize the hell out of her.
Yeah, like I think that's kind of one of my big problems with this part is that it feels like it's mostly played for shock value.
Yeah. Jen, what are your thoughts on this? You've been like, you and I are both very attached to Chihiro, and we've had a long time to kind of wrangle with this part of the game. What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, Chihiro means a whole lot to me, and it's partially because of Chapter 2, the worst chapter in the game. Yeah, knowing what I do, having gone through that trial and all that, there's something about seeing the body again that's kind of sickening in a, oh yeah, this, here we go sort of way, where I know what's going to happen during the investigation, the trial, everything like that, and it's a lot to think about, and all I can think about is how much I would have liked it if they did justice by her instead of what they're going to do within the next half of this.
So real talk, everybody. Normally this is around the time where I, you know, assign the homework for next week. But next week's going to be a little interesting because of how deep, like, the second part of this chapter, the four of us kind of knew going in that this is going to be a rough spot for us. And there's some stuff that is going to happen in this trial that I would never force anybody to do. So, yeah, this is rough. But I will say this. It really is after this initial really, really rough patch that the series does pick up. So I really do encourage everybody to, like, stick with it. But it's going to be tough. And we're going to be honest about it, and we're going to have a discussion about it. Closing thoughts on this chapter. Jackie.
They should have given Chihiro a gun.
Feety pajamas and the little pocket.
Chihiro
is
with feety pajamas and a Glock.
we've all seen that picture of Chiaki holding the gun.
It's Chihiro with a gun.
Yeah.
I'm gonna have to draw that now. That should be, listen, your real, okay, homework assignment for next week isn't to necessarily play this chapter if you don't want to stomach it. It's to draw a picture of Chihiro Fujisaki in feety pajamas and with a gun. Or
The quality of the picture does not matter, but you do have to send it to twitter.com/youdespaircast.
If you're not already, please follow us on the Twitter.
Yeah, follow us. Send us your pictures of Chihiro with a gun and her feety pajamas. If you personally have a Chihiro cosplay, feety pajamas and or a gun, like, cosplay works too.
Yeah,
you are Chihiro Fujisaki, if you are a pair of feety pajamas, if you are a gun,
write
that shit in, and
right at despaircast@gmail.com. also, at the time of this episode going up and for a little bit forward, I did put up a little form. I'll talk about it during the bumper, but yeah, we got some big stuff coming on. And also, to end this on a positive note, I'm gonna we very soon will be having a very special guest onto the podcast, so I hope you're all looking forward to that. Let's just say I am currently I'm gonna keep this under wraps, but I'm really excited about this. Let's just say I've gotten in contact with one of the voice actors for Danganronpa, and they are very interested in having an interview with us, so definitely look forward to that. Closing thoughts, anybody else?
Could you please just like edit in that scream that Toko makes? That's like an ah.
Yeah, it's a really good like the ah, la, 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 that one.
Yeah, yeah, that's about my concluding thoughts on the end of daily life.
Yeah, this is gonna be a heck of an episode for me to edit. It's about 11:20, so
I mean, we made good time. It's only been an hour five, an hour six.
Yeah. So let's do the close, and I say, remember, homework assignment is drawing a picture of Jihiro Fujisaki in Fini pajamas, and or the investigation daily life segment of Chapter 2 of Danganronpa 1 Trigger Happy Havoc. Till next time, though, I've been Kyrie.
And I'm Jennifer.
I've been, and I will continue to be Jackie, barring extreme circumstances.
I'm Inez, and you have my full permission to just skip reading Case 2.
And I'm a gun!
Didn't I already? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Jen already went. Kiri.
Yeah, at the same time. Oh, yeah. Jen.
And I'm Jennifer. And I buckle up for next week, I guess.
Yep. Hi, it's me, Gun again.
Oh, I've been gifted to Chihiro Fujisaki. Class dismissed, everybody. It's been 1 week. It's been 1 week since you looked at me.
Don't do it.
Too late.
No, this is not... Listen, here's the thing. We are not the Bare Naked Ladies. We will not do this. We could be the Bare Naked Ladies.
Well, we could.
We are all wearing clothes, I think.
Well, says you.
Well, speak for yourself.
It's cold, okay?
So...